This is Digital Story Podcast number 844, May 24th, 2022. Today's theme is, how much fill flash do you really need? I'm Derek Story. Fill flash is a fundamentally sound practice that improves portraits in many situations, but some photographers shy away from it because they don't want to carry a cumbersome hot shoe flash. But is there a nimble option that provides the desired results without adding bulk to your kit? There is. And that's the first story of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Believe me, no one dislikes bulk more than I do, right? And I got rid of my clumsy hot shoe flashes years ago. But I do carry a shirt pocket Metz 26 AF2 that has saved my bacon time and time again. How? By providing just enough fill light for backlit people when working outdoors. That's the beauty of fill light. You can hold on to some of that background tonality while still rendering a pleasant exposure for the main subject. Now, the thing that I've learned over time is that I only need a little fill light for this magic to work. So that's how I got rid of those big potato mashers. Okay, I don't need those anymore. This discovery has allowed me to rely on pop-up flashes and shirt pocket accessories. Now, I have a little formula that I use with this, but let's start by talking about the technique and the devices themselves. Then I'll give you the formula. When I'm covering an event outside, which is most of them these days, or many of them these days, I should say, you know the thing about event photography, and this doesn't have to be something for hire. This can be a birthday party, an anniversary, a wedding reception. It can be any number of things that we find ourselves attending with camera in hand. So when you're outdoors at any type of event, you don't really have control. let's be honest now. You don't really have control over where people stand in relationship to the light, right? In other words, the action happens and you're expected to get a photo regardless of the conditions around it. Because most people don't even really realize the conditions. I get art directed all the time, or they try to art direct me all the time. And I politely know how to push back and say, no, I really want this. I really want you here. Given an option, can we do this? And most of the time, of course, they give in. And that gives me a little bit more working room, a little bit more of an edge to hang on to as I'm trying to, you know, accomplish these goals. Fill flash has really helped me, you know, conquer, you know, those tough lighting conditions. And the way that it works on modern cameras, most of us know this, but I'm just going to say it anyway so that we're all on the same playing field here. The way that it works on modern cameras is that they're very smart, as are the flashes. So you put the flash on the camera, and let's just say you're shooting outdoors. You can just put it in program mode if you want. Just put the camera in program mode. Turn the flash on to TTL mode, you know, automated mode where it's letting the camera read the light. And then fire away. I mean, when you're in an event and you're just like battling, you know, one thing and then this is happening, changing lighting, all this kind of stuff. That's really handy to just put the flash on the camera, put it in program mode, turn it on, and start shooting. Now, of course, I have a few little things to enhance this experience, but that's the essence of it. And what happens is that the camera is mainly focusing on exposing the background, right? The ambient light. And then it's also simultaneously working with the flash to expose the subject that's within flash range. And its goal is, and it does this very well most of the time, is to balance best that it can the subject with the background. And this is why it's so cool. So you could shoot these backlit subjects, which we run into all the time at events and everywhere else in the world. We could shoot them without flash. And yes, you can just expose on the subject's face. Of course you can. So you get a nice rendered face, but you're going to lose all of the background. The background is just going to become not white, but super, super bright, right? Super bright. Now, if you want to have the background exposed properly, then your subject on a backlit situation is going to be underexposed, very dark. And you could try to recover that darkness, you know, with shadow recovery. And you could recover a fair amount of it, but it's not the same as just bringing in a little bit of light from the front to give your camera and your post-processing software half a chance of really rendering this thing in a pleasing manner. And that's what Phil Flash is all about. And that's why it's so exciting to an event photographer, because if you do my magic formula, which is not magic at all, but I like to play it up. If you do my magic formula, plus just a little light coming in from the front, you can do amazing things with your pictures and they can look fantastic. Now, why don't we need those big flash units anymore? Well, the reason why we've been able to move beyond that is because our sensors in our cameras are so good these days. Even if you shoot Micro Four Thirds, right, which is basically the smallest professional sensor, even if you shoot Micro Four Thirds, you can shoot outdoors at ISO 1600 and virtually not give up anything in terms of quality, right? The shots look great. Now, I suppose if you magnified in at 4,000 times and all that, you could see a difference between that and ISO 200. And I certainly wouldn't shoot landscape at ISO 1600, but we're talking about events. We're talking about people and places, right? So we're talking about shots that look very, very nice at ISO 1600 with modern cameras, with today's cameras. In my case, I'm using, you know, the OM-1, and I'm using the Pentax KP. Both of these cameras are excellent at ISO 1600 and beyond, of course. But 1600, no problem. So why is that higher ISO so important to what I'm talking about? Because the camera is more sensitive to light, and therefore you need less fill light. And therefore, and I know you're way ahead of me now, and therefore, a smaller flash unit will work just fine. We don't need that giant boosh that lights up, you know, the entire football field. We just need a little thing that gives us a little pop of light right into the face. And then, you know, we can go from there. Our cameras today have allowed us, the quality of our cameras today, have allowed us to go with smaller flash units to achieve the same results. Now, other benefits of fill flash while we're here, right? While we're here, let's talk about that. When you have light coming in from the front, it's flattering, right? For people, it's flattering. A little sparkle in the eyes, that's flattering, right? All these things are very nice to have and they make people look good. Whereas if you have the light coming from the side, or you have shadows on their face or dappled lighting or all these other things that could happen without any supplemental light, that's not as flattering. The little fill light with balancing with the ambient lighting conditions is just terrific. It's flattering. It's easy. So why not do it? Especially if you know you don't need a gigantic flash to achieve this. Alrighty. So let's talk a little bit about my magic formula for doing this, right? I don't know why. I don't even know why I started saying that, because there's really nothing magic about it. The first thing is, shoot everything in RAW, okay? By shooting in RAW, now you have a double whammy going for you, right? You got a little bit of fill light coming in from the front, so that's nice. And then by shooting RAW, you have a greater ability to balance that bright background with the subject. And so RAW just gives you that little extra latitude in contrasty situations to really get the most out of the shot. Now, you could just shoot in RAW, as I said earlier, without the fill flash. It doesn't look the same. That little bit of light coming in from the front makes a big difference. You know how cameras sometimes are more sensitive to things than our eyes are? And that little bit of extra light coming in from the front really makes a difference. Coupled with RAW, it really works out well. Now, one thing that I like to do, if I can, if I'm going to use fill flash, and I have a say in it. I like to move the subjects in the shade, right? I don't care so much about how bright that background is, as long as it's not like beaming bright. But if it's just like normal bright, move them in the shade. That way I have even light on them. Now I have the nice fill light coming in from the front, flattering. And then because I'm shooting raw, I can recover that little bit of extra that I usually need to from the background, although the camera's typically doing a pretty good job of balancing that background with the foreground, with the subject, but the RAW gives me a little extra. So shooting in open shade with the fill flash and in RAW, very nice. Okay, nothing magic about that, but boy, does it work good. Now, the second thing I like to do that I mentioned earlier is raise the ISO up a bit if I need to. That way, that gives me a little more working distance with the flash, a little bit more working distance. This isn't mandatory. Now, I'll start out at ISO 200 or 400 and see how things are going. But if I feel the flash being taxed, in other words, the recharge times, the recycle times are longer than I want, because I like, on group shots, I like to take 2, 3, 4 shots, right? So I want to go bang, 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 bang. If the flash can't keep up with that because it's having to output too much light and I'm falling behind where I start getting a checkerboard thing, you know, flash on, flash off, flash on, flash off kind of thing, then if I raise the ISO up, it will be discharging less light, it will recycle faster, and chances are the flash can keep up with me at the pace that I want to shoot. So raising that ISO really has some nice benefits. The flash will recycle faster, and just overall, it's less taxing on your batteries, all that good stuff. And believe me, if you have a modern camera, ISO 1600 with a good exposure, remember, we're talking about with a good exposure, ISO 1600 with a good exposure, yeah, the shot's going to look good. I never have people comment about the shots other than, you know, they're really pretty, they're nice and sharp, things like that. Okay, now the third thing is to help you, kind of stay within bounds of your flash, I work with a shorter zoom, okay? So I'm usually working, when I'm with fill flash, I'm usually between like 28 millimeters and 50 millimeters in that range there. And I have a couple zooms that keep me within that range. By staying there, then that forces me to get a little bit closer to the subject, which is good in a lot of ways. It's also good in terms of you get this kind of intimate vibe in the shot that you don't get with a telephoto lens sometimes, but it also keeps you working within flash range by having that little wider zoom on there. I would say most of the time I'm shooting between like 35 and 40 millimeters. That's kind of the range I'm at. The flash can reach that no problem. It feels good. There isn't much distortion, if any at all. Remember, keep your camera plane parallel to your subject plane just to make sure that you minimize any distortion that might happen, and you're in very good shape. So those are the three ingredients to my magic formula, which is A, first ingredient, shoot in RAW. Second ingredient, don't be afraid to raise the ISO a little bit so that you get faster recycle times on your flash, right? And that it has plenty of light for your subject without taxing the batteries too much. And then finally, to help kind of pull this all together, work with a shorter zoom so that you're more or less close to your subject, at least close enough for the flash to reach them. Let's talk about the flashes themselves. My favorite of these compact flashes, which was the Metz 26 AF2, it has been discontinued. I'm saddened to say, and I'm really bummed about this because in a sense there wasn't really anything quite like it. Now I have a good substitute for you that I really like, but I do miss the Metz 26 AF2, and you would buy it for, you know, your camera. So I have one for the Pentax and I have one for Olympus Panasonic, and they just work. You know, they got TTL button, LED button, all that. So if you ever run across one for your camera, they are pretty cool little flashes. They just take two AAA batteries, but yet it's so efficient that those batteries last pretty well. and it fits in your shirt pocket without even making the pocket sag. I mean, it's really nice. It tilts up and down. Ugh, such a cool flat. I'm so glad. I'm going to protect them even more now that I know they're discontinued. I didn't realize they're discontinued until I started doing some research for the show. And I go, what? What do you mean you can't get them anymore? Hey, who thought of that? Right? That wasn't a great idea. Okay, but I do have a backup for you. And it's the Mikey, M-E-I-K-E, MK32P Mini Flash. And you can get it for $69. So M-E-I-K-E, MK320 Mini Flash, $69. I got a link to it in the show note. So the one that I was looking at fits Panasonic and Olympus and other Micro Four Thirds cameras, supports manual TTL, optical slave, front rear curtain sync, overheating protection, and automatic sleep mode, has a built-in LED auxiliary light, external USB interface, weighs only 150 grams, and it's small and easy to carry, metal hot shoe, supports on-camera, off-camera flash triggering. It looks pretty good. It looks pretty now. I haven't physically tested it, but I did a fair amount of research on, okay, now that the METS isn't available, what is the alternative? And I really think that this is the best bet. If you get one and shoot with it, let us know. Let us know what you think of it. There's that alternative to the METS. Also, if you have like the old Olympus, was it 320? I think it's the 320, the little portable one, which I have. That is a nice little flash as well. However, remember, if your camera has a pop-up flash, or if you get that little auxiliary flash like we get with the Olympus cameras that go in the hot shoe, that one actually has a bounce head, and it's mini. It's mini, mini. The only thing I don't like about it is that it uses your camera battery and doesn't have separate battery for itself. Same thing with the pop-up flash on the camera. However, my point being that you probably already have a flash that you can use for this purpose, right? You don't have to go out and buy something. You can, you know, at least get a feel for it. Now, they're not quite as powerful as those little pocket flashes like I'm talking about, the METS or the MK30. However, you can start to do a before and after, do a little testing and really go, oh, this is nice, right? This is nice. So you can work with what you have right now, and then if you like it, you can find yourself a little pocketable accessory flash. Bottom line on this, you know, we're going, if you're in North America, we're going into the warm season here. We're going to be outdoors. We're going to be shooting people shots. If you have some fill flash with you or have tested the stuff that you have to use fill flash, it's money. It's gold. It really is. Remember my magic formula. Get a little flash that you like that doesn't take up hardly any room and give it a go. I think you're going to like it. The 9-volt AirCap camera body cap hides an Apple AirTag. I saw this thing today and I go, we've got to talk about this on the show, right? And you can read the entire article on Petapixel. I have a link in the show notes. Let me read you what they say here. Camera and computer accessory brand 9-volt has created a camera body cap that on the surface looks normal, but secretly hides a slot to hold an Apple AirTag so that photographers can always locate their equipment. In major cities, cameras are often targeted by thieves because of how quickly and easily they can be flipped for large sums of cash. In San Francisco, the problem is so rampant that some thieves not only target photographers in broad daylight, but they have also been caught breaking into cars while they're stuck in traffic. I've seen these stories. A recent report showed that stolen equipment is often separated from bags and luggage within a few minutes of being stolen, so hiding an AirTag in the lining of a camera bag or Pelican case will only work for a short amount of time. 9-volt, a computer and camera accessory brand, recognized this problem and has come up with a solution. 9-volt says that its AirCap is a carbon fiber composite camera body cap that is made to keep a photographer's camera sensor protected like a standard body cap. But it also includes a hidden rear compartment within the cap that holds an AirTag. The company says that the hidden compartment shows no obvious signs that it is removable. This is a cool part, right? And is secured with four strong magnets. To access the hidden compartment, the photographer needs to twist the inside air cap to release the magnets and invert the cap. Haha. 9Volt manufactures the air cap for Canon RF, Fuji GFX, Sony E, Nikon Z, Phase 1 XF, and PL mount. Each cap retails for $49, and the AirTag, of course, is not included. While similar-looking body caps or lenses are visible in 9Volt's Instagram video, the company doesn't seem to offer lens caps with an AirTag compartment for cameras other than those mentioned here. Hopefully, they'll do it for Fuji crop-sensored cameras and Micro Four Thirds. I would love that. I think this is a pretty clever idea. The cap looks kind of cool, and having the AirTag actually in the cap that's probably going to stay with the camera seems like a pretty good idea. I like it. I'll keep an eye on the story. If there are more developments, more cameras, I'll try to update. Alrighty. Anyway, cool idea, and I just had to share it with you. TIPA World Awards 2022. So I like these things. Now, I know some folks aren't into the awards, and they feel like, well, everyone's a winner and all that kind of stuff. And to some degree, that's true. But it's still interesting to see which cameras and lenses are singled out, especially for the TIPA World Awards. I'm going to tell you a little bit. This is all from the TIPA website. And so I have the link in the show notes, so you can go there and nose around more if you want, because there's a lot more information. But I thought it'd be interesting to find out who TIPA is, and then I'll mention some of the awards for 2022. Founded in 1991, the Technical Image Press Association, TIPA, is composed of many member publications in the photo imaging field, published in print and online. These publications cover the full range of the industry, including consumer, professional, B2B, and fine art photography. Member magazines and their online presence have wide reach and readership in many languages and cover markets around the world in Europe, Asia, Australia, and North and South America. Editors and their staff make up a global panel of knowledgeable experts who have earned a reputation for honest and trustworthy appraisal of photo and imaging products. Their magazines and websites have built a loyal following among their readers. Each member publication is engaged in the selection and final vote for the TIPA World Awards to name the best photo and imaging products of the year. Okay, so that's who these guys are, the Technical Image Press Association. And as I said, I always look forward to their awards. So I have, let me see, I've got about eight. Now, they have a lot more, but I'm going to mention what I consider the highlights for 2022. And you can go to the website if you want to see the rest of the stuff or read more about them. Now, one of the things that they did this year, which I think is noteworthy, is that now Micro Four Thirds has its own category. It has its own category now, which I just think it's great. The best Micro Four Thirds camera for 2022, no surprise, OM System OM1. Best APS-C camera, the Nikon Z FC. Now, I think that award's a little bit interesting, and the arc of the Nikon Z FC has been a little bit of a roller coaster, actually, because when it was first announced and people looked at it, they go, that is a cool-looking camera, right? It's got the whole throwback look and all that sort of stuff. And then some folks were a little disappointed in its controls and stuff. No one was disappointed in the image quality. The pictures coming out of that camera are fantastic. And I think we all agreed on that. I tested it too. And I thought, you know, it's like so close, but not quite there. Well, then, you know, in recent weeks and even last couple months now, it's been doing really well again in terms of review and winning some awards and stuff like that. So I would say this camera is going to end up on the upswing, which I'm happy about. One of the things about the Nikon ZFC for me was I just didn't want to start a new format. I'm up to my ears right now with Micro Four Thirds, and I really love, you know, my Pentax kit, and I have one medium format camera, and that's all I can manage here. I can't do any more. However, if I were to add another format, I would go Nikon Z. I really enjoy the Nikon Z cameras that I've shot with. So anyway, I'm happy to see that the Nikon ZFC got best APS-C camera, best full-frame expert camera, the Sony Alpha 7 Mark IV, very good camera, best full-frame professional camera, the Nikon Z9, and honestly, based on everything I've read about the Z9, I haven't shot with it yet, but based on everything I read about it, that one was a bit of a no-brainer. The Nikon Z9 is getting great, great reviews. People love it. Best camera innovation, the Canon EOS R3, which I actually think is a good choice there. Best rangefinder camera, the Leica M11, which is a camera I would love to shoot with. I don't think that's going to happen, but can always dream, right? I would love to shoot with the M11, maybe for, 5 or 6 years. And the best professional 4K hybrid camera, the Panasonic Lumix DC-GH6. And it is a good 4K hybrid camera. It is a great camera, period, right? It's a great camera. It's Micro Four Thirds, wonderful camera, and a very good choice in that category. And then the best medium format camera surprised me a little bit. They're going with the Fujifilm GFX 50S Mark II. I mean, they beat out, you know, the other folks, and we all know who the other medium format folks are. Still, pretty nice award. So those are the highlights from the 2022 TIPA awards. There's a lot more. They have a whole bunch of lenses, and they have some other products on the site if you're interested. Click on the link in the show notes, but it's kind of fun to see what captured their eye. And I have to tell you, this is a good looking list. All right, let's do a little virtual camera club news. Yes, our Inner Circle members are still hanging out on the new site that we have for them. And we're having fun. And as we wind down the month of May, black and white is our photo challenge for May, but we're going to have a new one in June. The black and white work has been terrific to look at. And then there's been some terrific side conversations as well. This is a great experience. It has really enhanced my interaction and my appreciation of all the terrific artists that we have in the Inner Circle. If you want to become a part of this, if you want to have access to the Inner Circle site on Derek Story Online, and be a part of the Patreon site as well, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look at that site there. If you like what you see, sign up, become an Inner Circle member. You'll get access to the Hangout site with all the stuff that's going on. You'll have access to our Patreon site just for Inner Circle. And you will just become part of the group that finds out about stuff early, that gets discounts on all of our workshops, online or physical, and enjoys other perks as well. And of course, it goes without saying, a huge thanks to our existing Inner Circle members. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast. I have affiliate links on all the pages of the Digital Story for Amazon and B&H. I have tiles in the second column. If you are so motivated by something that I talk about, you go, you know what, Derek, that is a great idea. I want to get it. If you click on the tile first on the Digital Story and then get it, that helps support the site. And also, when I put the links in the show notes to stuff and in the articles as well on Amazon and B&H, if you use those links, that'll take you right to the product, and those are affiliate links as well. Thank you for taking that extra step. I appreciate it, and it really helps support this show. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, the printing gurus, the folks that have your back when it comes to inkjet printing, the folks that have everything that you need, from paper to knowledge to accessories to just little goodies that you don't even know you needed until you start nosing around their site. That's the fun thing. Remember last week I was talking about they have a scrapbooking kit. They have a scrapbooking kit. I didn't know that. I didn't know they had a scrapbooking kit. I'm just sort of wandering around looking at stuff, and I go, wow, they have a scrapbooking kit. And I love finding little things like that. Now, me personally, I'm not a scrapbooker, but I like knowing that they have a kit for scrapbookers, because if I run into somebody, I go, you know what? You want to get started on this? Go over here. Take a look at what they have. It'll probably make it easier for you. Just a one-stop shopping for all of your supplies. That's what they want to do. They want to provide you with the knowledge and the tools that you need without having to run all over the place to get it from different sites and, you know, maybe people who aren't as nice and friendly as they are. Red River Paper has a tile on all the pages of the digital story. Click on it, take you over to our landing page, and then you can begin exploring from there. And they also have a Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them, our longest running sponsor. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Phil Flash, I'm telling you, it's where it's at when you're outdoors with people. I'm working on some more stuff for next week. Until then, have a great week. Be creative. Stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.